The subject of this evening's talk was a request which somebody gave about 3 months ago, and I didn't have time to speak on their topic because of the end of the season when the monks go back to their monasteries and stay there for 3 months. Even though that is a 3 month retreat, we call it a rest time, which means the rest of the monks have a great holiday, but I have to work because I have to teach them. That's why I call it rest time. I still have to do work. But nevertheless, it's less work than usual, and so you do come back refreshed. But the talk which I remember someone asked me to give was on goal setting in Buddhism. I'm going to talk about that because it's something which people often cultivate in their daily lives. They set themselves goals, even if it's only to this year make sure you don't lose any more demerit points with the speed cameras. It's very fortunate driving with a monk, because even today we passed a speed camera, we were speeding, but it was just before he set it up. Or about a week ago, we were just passing a speed trap on the freeway, and it was a car in front which got stopped, not us. So there's a lot of merit or good karma when you have a monk sitting next to you in the car. So those of you who have lost a lot of demerit points, especially the double demerit points on the weekend, you can always hire a monk to help stop losing points. It can be a new fundraiser for the Buddhist Society. Hire a monk, hire a nun. But we set ourselves goals in many areas of our life, but against that, many of you understand Buddhism as saying no craving. Just go with the flow, let it be. So how can we reconcile setting goals and relaxing and doing nothing? And obviously the answer is that we always set ourselves goals, even in meditation. But the point is to know that one is setting real good goals, and some of those goals is the goal to do nothing, the goal of no goal. And that's an important thing to set oneself. But we start off with the ordinary goals we set ourselves in life. And too often those goals we set ourselves are completely ridiculous, stupid, inane, dumb, but we still set them. Like winning the lottery this week. You haven't got a hope in hell of winning that lottery. So don't even bother buying the ticket. At least you're a dollar or two better off. Or you may have the goal of, you know, being the richest, healthiest person in the world, or your team always winning. Apparently, while I was on retreat, the Eagles won the, what's it called? The grand final? And apparently they only won by 1 point. It's amazing what Buddhist chanting can do. Just get you over the edge. But they've yet to say thank you to me. I'm very disappointed. Because actually some years ago that I was in the studio at 6PR, and doing a talkback show with Ben Cousins. He was next to me as well. And I taught him a little bit about meditation. You know, especially, you know, how to levitate so he can catch the ball before the opposition. So he still hasn't acknowledged the Buddhist contribution to the success of the West Coast Eagles. But one day he might. But anyhow, that we've set ourselves goals, but the goals have to be reasonable goals. And one of the problems with goal setting in life is we make very unreasonable goals. Now, some years ago, I was reading one of these magazines, I think it was Nova, and there was a guy coming to Perth teaching people how they can live forever. And that was the goal. So you don't have to die. And he said, so far, so good, the fellow said. Of course, anyone can say that so far. I haven't died yet, so it must be going well. And I think he offered a money-back guarantee if you follow my course. But of course, once you die, you can't claim your money back. So it's a complete scam. And most people could see through that, but a lot of people can't. And they set unreasonable goals of living forever. And do you really want to set that goal of immortality? What would immortality mean? It means hundreds of years in nursing homes. It's a stupid goal to set. So you've got to set yourself a reasonable goal. And look for the goals which we set in life. And are they reasonable? Are they attainable? Sometimes we want to set our goals to have physical comfort, material comfort. And so you work very hard. You buy your first house, maybe just a weatherboard shack in sort of a rough suburb of Perth, like Nollamara. But you see, ever since the monks came here, the prices have gone up. But anyhow, and then you pay off the mortgage. And what do people do when they get themselves pay off the mortgage? They buy themselves a bigger home. And when they pay it off, they buy a bigger home, or maybe even a second home which they can rent out, thinking that they can get material comfort. If that's your goal in life, really think about it. When do you ever stop? When is it ever enough? Actually, that question has been answered definitively, scientifically, with a study which was performed in the universities of America. Harvard was involved, I think Princeton also, maybe UCLA, I can't remember exactly which universities. They wanted to study the connection between income and happiness. And they used indicators such as a person's health, their relationship, and their lack of stress, their psychological well-being, and to see how income affected your happiness levels. You know what they found? They found, obviously, when you're poor, you're not happy, because it's a struggle when you haven't got enough money to pay the bills. You have to worry about where the money's coming from. And they said, as you get more income, your income level rises. You get happier and happier and happier, until you actually reach a peak. There's always a peak, an optimum. And once you get to that level of income, any more, actually, your happiness goes down. You start to worry so much, you've got too much problems, too many things to look after, whether it's your shares, you're always worried about the stock market going down. And interestingly, it's always in October you have the stock market crashes. But don't worry about that, it's not going to crash this year. But then again, you never know. But anyway, they find it doesn't matter how much you have, they have an optimal level of income. And that optimal level is about 50,000 Australian. It's amazing. And above that, actually your happiness level goes down, 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 down. And I've mentioned that before here, and I mention that again, because if you're earning more than $50,000 a year, especially a lot more than that, the Buddhist Society of Western Australia can help you increase your happiness. We can bring you back to the optimum of 50,000. I'm sure you know how. The donation box is over there. But one of the points of that, it's never worked. I did that in Singapore. I said that story and still it didn't work. So people just don't believe science. But anyhow, that the goal we have of thinking the more money, the more happiness, obviously is a stupid goal. So we have to, when we're setting our goals, we have to set reasonable goals, good goals. Goals which really are going to increase the happiness and well-being of ourselves and others. And that is a tough one, to identify our goals, the reasonable ones. Just going for wealth doesn't work. Sure, it can be a goal, you can achieve that, but is it going to make you happy? Is it really worth it? What are you sacrificing? For the extra few dollars a week, or $100 or $1,000. I know this is one of the stories, it's not in the book, but I tell this very often at Serpentine. This is one of the stories of our modern times. It's a story of the boy who asked his father when he came home from work, "Daddy, how much do you earn an hour at your job?" You know what it's like when you come home? You're tired. The last thing you want is stupid questions from your son. He said, "Shut up." And the son said, "Daddy, how many dollars do you earn at work?" "I told you, be quiet. I'm tired." Because you get grumpy when you're tired. And the little boy, maybe 6 years of age, said, "Daddy, how many dollars do you earn?" "That's it. Get to your room. You're grounded." And he shouted at his little six-year-old. He started to cry and walked up to his room. He only asked a simple question. And Daddy, after half an hour, maybe a cup of tea or coffee or something, he started feeling really guilty, as you do when you shout at your loved ones. You think, "I shouldn't have done that. It was only a simple question. The reason I shouted at him was because I was tired." So he decided to make amends. He went up to his son's bedroom, knocked on the door, let himself in and said, "Sorry, son. I was tired. I shouldn't have shouted at you." It's always good to apologize. I don't know why a six-year-old wants to know how much I earn, but the answer is $20 an hour. That's how much I earn at work. And I have to work hard for that too. This little six-year-old smiled and said, "Oh, thank you so much, Daddy. Now can I borrow $10, please?" And the father was about to explode in rage again, but would not get angry at his son twice. So he said, "Look, I don't know why you want $10, but I've got angry at you once. Here you are, have $10. And he gave his son a $10 note. Son smiled, reached under his pillow, and took out, in a couple of notes and coins, another $10. He counted out 20, handed it to his father, and said, "Now, Daddy, can I buy 1 hour of your time, please?" You understand that story? A little child needed his father's attention and thought the only way he could get it was buying 1 hour of his parents' time. Now, we can understand when we set our goals, what's really important? To make sure when we set goals which are really meaningful rather than just being wealthy or just getting by in our career. You know your family is important. You know your well-being is important. You can set goals, but not at the expense of your health and well-being. It's common sense. And some of us, when we set our goals, we set reasonable goals. It's hard work, and sometimes we don't know when we should give up and when we should keep on going. And that's one of the toughest questions for each one of us. Whether you're in a relationship and it's hard work and you wonder, should I give up or should I keep trying? Whether you're in a business, and you all know when you start business, the first year or two is a hard one. I know that because the monk business is very hard the first year or two. You wouldn't believe that when we first started our monastery down at Serpentine, it was touch and go. Because the first years, there's only two monks, and no one trusted us. Who were these bald-headed freaks in their brown robes? No one knew who we were. I told that story to some monks last night. Sometimes people see you and they don't know what a Buddhist monk is. I was visiting a relation in England some years ago. They lived in the city in the Midlands of England called Stoke-on-Trent. I visited them, those cousins, and in the morning we went on a walk to have some exercise. And it's very strange because as we were walking through the city centre of Stoke-on-Trent in Staffordshire, people were pointing at me and laughing. Time again, people, and not just young people, old people too, were pointing and bursting out laughing. And I was not really embarrassed, but I was surprised because usually you don't get that response even from a Buddhist monk. And it was only a little bit later when I found out why, because I went past the sign. There was a circus in town, and they thought I was one of the clowns. With a new outfit. Maybe it's because it was very cold in that part of the world. I had a red nose. I don't know. But I didn't mind people laughing. At least I was creating some happiness in the world. And what better goal could you have than creating happiness, even if it means people laughing at you? It's one of the great things about being a Buddhist monk, that you actually taught, you're trained not to worry what people think of you. If you make a mistake and people laugh, what a wonderful thing, you're spreading happiness in the world. Why do people get embarrassed about, you know, when you make a mistake and people laugh? You should be so pleased that your silly actions has created happiness in life. And even, now happiness, one of the reasons we tell jokes in this place is simply because it's good for your health. As everybody knows, a doctor who comes regularly, some of the latest research, I think it was in some Lancet or AMA journal, actually say when you do laugh, your arteries actually expand. They dilate. So what that means is all that cholesterol which you have, because I had fish and chips today, so if I laugh a lot, it balances. You don't get heart attacks. Because when you laugh, you're doing it now, your arteries expand, and all that gut can actually go through for a change. So, today's joke, I don't know what this has got to do with goals, but I told it earlier today, and it's a great joke, apparently it's a true story, of the Italian ambassador to the United Nations. He didn't know English very well. When he first went out for lunch, he went to a bar, like a pub, and he asked the barmaid for a quickie. And the guy next to him said, "It's pronounced quiche." And your arteries are now expanding. Anyway, so perhaps he should set his goal of speaking good English. And maybe not, because sometimes it creates a lot of happiness. So we set some reasonable goals, and the point is that sometimes we have to give up those goals, because it's not going to work. And whenever you give up a goal, you see actually the goal was unreasonable. You could not achieve it. It was impossible. You learn from the experience. And next time you set goals which are in your capability of achieving, and not these high goals. Which is one of the reasons that being an idealist, and most monks are idealists, who want to sort of do something for the world. And sometimes when you're young, you want to change the whole world. And it gets very frustrating when you see and read in the newspapers what goes on in this world. The corruption, the lies, the destruction. And sometimes people get quite despondent about what might happen in our future. Whether it's wars in Iraq, whether it's global warming, corruption in governments, wars, terrorism. And sometimes we say, what can I do about this? The problem is, there's always something you can do. You set yourself a goal not to stop terrorism, not to stop wars, not to stop global warming, not to have these big ideals, but to start with where you are and how can I lessen global warming? How can I create less cause for terrorism? How can I ease the pain of people in conflict? Can you see the difference between those two goals? One is just so far ahead of you that you'll never reach it, it seems, and you'll give up on the journey. It's a goal too far. But the goal of the humble goals, of just helping one person, lessening your ecological footprint, doing a little bit less, helping one person instead of helping the whole world, is in your power. And this was a great insight for me as a monk to realize if I aim to help the whole world, I will give up after a short time because it's an impossible journey. But if I aim to help one person, that's something I can do. And I'll do that now. And when I've helped the first person, then, having achieved that goal, I'll help the next. And the next. And the next. And the next. Those incremental goals are where you have the high achievers. You set the big goals, you have the high failures. Even building our monastery at Serpentine. It literally was one brick at a time. One building at a time. One idea at a time. Let's do this first, finish it, stand back and see what to do next. That's why monasteries are organic. Sometimes people say, when is it going to be finished? Is it finished? No, we've been building it for 23 years. When does a tree finish growing? When do you finish learning? These things are things which don't finish. Helping, serving is something without an end. You don't save the world, that will be an end of the world. You're continually contributing. You can see this is a wise goal. Being kind, being compassionate, doing what you can now. The small goals are what makes the big effects. So that is perhaps the meaning of my life as a monk. You give one talk at a time, one group at a time. Sometimes the people see the schedules which I have when I go overseas. Our retreat finishes on Sunday morning, our range retreat. Monday morning, I'm off to Singapore and Bangkok and back again on Thursday for teaching and doing a Katina celebration on the next weekend. Then I'm off again. Sometimes people look at my schedule. My goodness, you must get so many frequent flyer points, which I do. I've almost got enough to buy my own aircraft. But no, that's not the point. You're just helping little by little, one by one, person by person, rather than having this huge goal of what you want to do in the future. This is the humble Buddhist goals of helping the person in front of you rather than helping the whole world. Doing the task at hand rather than thinking of the completion of the whole project, which makes life possible, which keeps you in the moment and keeps you very, very effective. Strange that what I get up to as a monk, I've given, even during the range retreat, a few strange talks. I went to the zoo last week. I think the monkeys were going bananas. I needed a bit of meditation training. No, that wasn't the reason why. I went to the Perth Zoo to give a talk in the School of Midwifery and Nursing. Also went to Furbridge Village. It was like almost a hippie festival. They wanted me to give a talk. It's amazing sort of places where you go and give talks. But also, it's very strange that now I'm going to give talks in human resources conferences. I'm going to one in April in London. They've invited me to pay the fares to a masterclass there. What is a monk doing? Teaching business people about how to do business. That was about 32 years ago before I had a job. I haven't been paid for a long time. But the point is that when you understand about goal setting and how to achieve those goals, what you learn even in a monastery or in a Buddhist society applies so much to our modern life. But when I gave a talk in Singapore, somebody noticed it and they say, we want this guy to give a master class to all his business leaders in this world conference in London in April. Interesting. Because these techniques work. The incremental goal setting within your power, one after a time. What happens with many people when they set the big goals and they fail, they lose their incentive to do anything in the future. They get despondent, depressed. Why bother? I am a failure. You do need successes by reaching your small goals to motivate you to the next goal. Otherwise, you give in. So my life has been that way, setting goals. If you fail the goal, great, a nice lesson to learn. If you achieve, great, more incentive for the future. But you see, the biggest goal which we set ourselves in Buddhism, the one which really empowers you to success, is the goal of that inner understanding. And of all the goals we set in the world, we make that the most important. The goal of inner happiness. We mention that because, again, maybe it's because I was a scientist by training, and you get all these reports, papers, which people send to me because they know I was a scientist, still interested in science. And one of the most powerful pieces of research which came out recently was, again, not the relationship now with goal setting and success, but with success and happiness. It's a brilliant paper which actually showed, with a huge amount of research, that happiness always precedes success, not the other way round. You're not successful and then you become happy, but you're happy first, and then success follows as a natural result. So if you are setting goals and you want to be successful in your goals, you find if you haven't got the happiness factor, you find you become impotent, ineffective, you don't achieve so much as you possibly could. So happiness gives power to your mind. It gives energy, incentive, enthusiasm. We all know how important that is in our progress through life, to be enthused. I can sit up here and give a talk and be really depressing. I don't really want to give a talk tonight. I should be on retreat. And if you talk in a monotone tone and no one really hears and you really all gossip. No, you put enthusiasm in your talk. When you put enthusiasm in your talk, it comes from happiness. It's always successful then. This is most important. Whatever you do in life, you give it everything you've got. You infuse your energies into the task at hand. Happiness gives you that energy. It's one of the reasons why that to have success in whatever goals you set, the first goal you should set is your own inner happiness. Even if you have a relationship with somebody else. If you are dry, unhappy, depressed, miserable, how on earth can you forge that connection with somebody else? Have you ever noticed depression, misery just brings you into yourself even more? When you're happy, you become outgoing. Depression sends you inwards, into your own world, a dark world, and that you really need, the dark people need other people more than anything, but you don't seek them out. That's one of the problems with such depression. When you have that happiness, then you can forge relationships. Happy people make friends very easily. Happy people can make those relationships. So really, the first goal which people should have in life is their own inner happiness. Get your act together. Create that peace and that happiness. And that is why many people come to centers like this. They come to meditation. They learn things like Buddhism because they make themselves happier and they become more successful and they become better husbands, wives, children, parents. It works. That's why people come here. Because they learn the art of happiness. Understand that should be your main goal. Now, how do we become happy? Such an easy thing to do. This is what we have with meditation. This is where we come back to the goal, which people think is a contradiction in terms. If you crave, you reach your goals. If you let go, you don't get anything. But actually, the letting go, contentment, the peace, the simplicity, is where you cultivate your inner happiness. It's where you gain your energy. It's a great thing, contentment, being still. It's as if in that stillness you're gathering the energies of your life, of the universe, into one spot, putting it under the microscope. When you do that, you concentrate the energies of your life. It's in stillness that people gain happiness. In rest, they get energy. This is one of the mistakes which people make. They think to achieve great things in life, they have to work so hard and keep on going. That's not the case. We work in our modern society inefficiently. I've seen people in front of those computer screens. They're so tired, they keep pressing the wrong buttons and keep making so many mistakes. The reason why they make so many mistakes and waste their time and other people's time is because they shouldn't be working, they should be resting, having a cup of coffee, going for a walk or something. 5 minutes investment in rest saves hours later on. Too many people in today's world, when they work 16 hours, the last 4 or 5 hours of those are completely a waste of time. Following morning you have to fix up all those mistakes again. This is our problem. Instead of working so hard in one go, take a break. You take that break and afterwards you go back to work again. You are fresh and you can achieve much more. That's what I do. That's why just before I came in here, I was running around doing many, many different jobs. And I take a break when I meditate. And that gives me the energy source back again. So to be successful in life, stillness creates that energy, creates that happiness. And this is where it's the lack of craving, it's the rest. You stop setting goals, or you set the goal of not doing anything for a short while to re-energize the happiness, the source of success, so the other goals you can achieve afterwards. It's how you reach those goals is what's most important. For those of you who are going for the greatest goal of all, of enlightenment, do you want to be enlightened? Many people say they want to be enlightened, but they haven't got a clue what enlightenment is. I said that's like going on a bus because they're a Buddhist. It's actually a story which is in the latest book, which is now out in the Buddhist Society of Western Australia. Advertisement over there. I give us a whole spiel, a chapter about enlightenment, and that's actually what it is. And how silly it is that many people, if you're Buddhist, you say, yes, I'm a Buddhist, I believe in Nirvana. What's Nirvana? I haven't got a clue, but I believe in it. It's like getting on a bus, not knowing where the destination is, not knowing where you're going. Do you really want to become enlightened? Now the whole point of that type of goal is, instead of calling it enlightenment, let's call it like peace, freedom, stillness, the end of all suffering. When you call it those types of goals, it gives it meaning. As I say, if you are going to set a goal for yourself, it should be a meaningful goal. Many of the monks in my monastery, and the visitors, many of them have come, especially the visitors, come to my monastery to learn the deep meditations we call jhanas. These are stages of bliss. A couple of years ago, this guy came all the way over from the US. He came there because he knew my reputation as teaching these very deep meditations. He always wanted to bliss out and get into these ecstasy states. And he was inspired by my teachings. He came all that way to learn jhanas, the deep meditation states. As soon as he arrived, he gave a donation to the monastery. By the end of the retreat, he still hadn't gained a jhana, so he did actually ask for the money back. He did. We had to give it him back because, you know, it's a Buddhist society. Okay, you can give it if you want. If you don't want it, you can give it back again. We're not non-clinging. That's our trouble. But then he got his money back afterwards. And anyway, So what a stupid thing it is to have those types of goals. So if you're a meditator, I'm telling people this year, don't aim for jhanas, aim for peace. Get a proper goal. Jhanas, you don't know what they are. You're aiming for something you don't know. You're like shooting an arrow, you don't know where the target is. You never experienced it before. So don't aim for the jhanas, aim for peace. You understand what that is. It's a goal which has meaning for you, which you can recognize. It's like a person who believes they want to go to heaven. Do you want to go to heaven? What's it like in heaven? Do you really want to eat ambrosia? That's apparently, when I was a kid, that's apparently what I heard when I went to Christian churches. We had ambrosia for breakfast, ambrosia for lunch, ambrosia for dinner. After a couple of centuries, you're sick to the teeth of ambrosia. In my heaven, you get fish and chips. Other people say, no, that's terrible in our heaven because they don't like fish and chips. They like curry and rice or whatever. But do you really want to go to those places? So sometimes we aim for places we don't know what we're aiming for. But peace, we know what that is. We get some idea. And this is actually where we set goals in the spiritual life, which are number one, attainable. You understand what they are. And when we get a little bit of peace, we get a reward and we can go the next step on the journey. The incremental, gradual path towards deeper and deeper stages of peacefulness, contentment and freedom. It's one of the reasons why, for I don't know how many years now, whenever I teach meditation here, I always ask you how you feel afterwards. This is a time when you come closest to the meaning of peace and freedom. You feel it. That's so important. You've reached a goal. You've understood it. It gets you the idea, the incentive, the means to go to the next step, a deeper state of peace, a more wide sense of freedom, a broader sense of the meaning of life, a deepening of insight. And as you go on this journey, incremental, one after the other, you find to go to the next stage of peace, what's necessary is a little bit more of letting go, of you disappearing, the will, the controller, the doer vanishing. It's as if, to get to those deeper goals, you have to abandon all goal setting and just be, and be still, and just allow things to go according to their natural process. You're still setting goals here, but the deepest goal of all, of stillness, of not doing. There's an old simile from the time of the Buddha. He said the difference between being enlightened and not enlightened is like a person who stands on one side of a great expanse of water, like a great river, and on the other side is enlightenment, freedom, safety. We have to cross that stream, cross that river, cross that body of water. And that was the old Buddhist simile of the path towards enlightenment. And that river is so wide, and that river is running so fast, that you can either wade, jump, or even swim across it. You just get caught in the current and drown. It's such a strong stream. And that's why that many people find it hard to find the deeper meanings of life, the peace, the freedoms, the liberations, the enlightenment. It's too far for you to cross. You have all your attachments. You have all of your little vices. You have all of your little things you enjoy, your attachments and cravings. How can I ever cross that great stream? And what actually happens, and you see this in the path of meditation, you understand what that stream is, which you have to cross. It is the stream of craving, of wanting, of doing things, of setting goals, the unattainable goals especially. And you find that there's no way you can swim across that. But there's another way. This is the way I was teaching in the last retreat, last few months in our monastery. The other way is you realize where the source of that great body of water is. The stream, the source, the spring. And you turn that off. It's not as if you need to cross the water. The stream dries up. It dries up until there's no water left between you and that far shore. The river of craving has stopped and dried. And then there's no difference between this shore and the far shore. That which separated you from enlightenment has now gone. The stream of craving. It's a very beautiful simile, because not only does it show you what enlightenment is, it shows you how to get there and the incremental path. Let go little by little, be more simple in your life, and you get more happiness. You don't need much to be blissed out. On the Katina Day, at our monastery, we always have an open day, and many of you have already seen my mansion, my abbot's dwelling, where I hang out, where I sleep, meditate, where I live. And invite any of you to go and see that. It is a cave. It's about 2.5 to 3 meters, only just long enough to lay down in. And it's one of the most simple dwellings you could ever imagine. It's only just a bit bigger than a dog kennel. And that's where I live. So you don't need much to be happy. You don't need much to have a good time. When you cut off that stream of craving, when you're not demanding so much of yourself and others, then you feel freedom. You get the biggest goal of all. Freedom to enjoy the moment and to enjoy yourself and to enjoy each other. Isn't it a problem that why we can't have the fun in life? We demand so much of ourselves and so much of our partners and our kids and our parents. We demand so much of our monks. People keep coming. My friend has had a heart attack. Can you do some chanting for them to keep them alive? And now our list of people to chant from is just so long. If all our chanting worked, all the undertakers in Perth would be out of business by now. So even though you do ask some chanting for your people who are sick, you all have to do the chanting for the undertakers as well to make sure they don't lose business. People got to die sometime anyway. So what's the big deal? Just time to go, let them go. Do you really want to live that old? 50, 60, 70. What's it like now? I tell you, it's going to get worse. So sometimes I think I really should refuse to chant for anybody over 60? 70? Okay, I don't know how I got onto that one. But anyhow, we've got ourselves set ourselves reasonable goals. And just the simple life is the most beautiful one. It's so important these days because whenever you do read a newspaper or people come to you, they're always talking about global warming, environmental problems, difficulties. And one of the easiest ways of solving that is to live more simply. And of all the religions, Buddhism teaches you to live simply. And you teach by example. Look how the monks live, you know, one meal a day. There's this robe I wear. I've got this one and one spare. That's my robe. I don't even have a wardrobe in my room. I have a line and you can just put all your clothes on top of that. How many of you have just got one change of clothing, like me? How many shoes have you women got? Now you see, we live simple simplicity. And obviously, living a simple life as a monk doesn't make you miserable. In fact, it's with lessening your demands on the environment, lessening your material possessions, actually gives you so much more freedom. So I think that Buddhism has got a lot to actually to contribute to our world. So you can live simply, and it's a happy way. You don't need so much. So your goal should not be achieving more, but actually to simplify. What a beautiful goal that would be in our life, to see how much more we can simplify. It's amazing, the smaller the house, the easier it is to clean. I still remember this group of middle-aged women. It was like an afternoon club, you know, of people who, they weren't working, they met together one morning a week, and they went to interesting places. And so one interesting, freaky place, weird place, was come to our monastery. Never been to one of those places before. That might be an interesting way of wasting an afternoon. So they all came to our monastery, and I took them around, and I showed them the hut I used to stay in. And I always remember the comment of this woman, once she saw inside my room, she said, "Wow, if only my house was this small, I'd get all my housework done in half an hour." And I really felt for her. How much housework do we have? How much do we have to clean and scrub and vacuum and paint and all that sort of stuff? Isn't it wonderful? You had a small, tiny little kuti, small like hut, which actually I get the government to make that for everybody. Just one hut each, 3 meters by 2.4. Wouldn't that be wonderful? And all these big developments. There's a land shortage apparently in Perth. People can't find enough land to build their houses because they've got big blocks. Just have one little hut for each person. Maybe a bigger hut if you've got a family. Maybe just slightly bigger. Now the point is there, I think if our modern world needs those environmental goals of simplicity, learning how to use less. And that's great for us. But we can only do that if we understand the inner contentment, the goal of inner peace and happiness. Because once you have that inner goal, the inner happiness inside of yourself, you know what life is all about, you've got the inner contentment, you're at peace no matter what happens, then you have power. Not the power to, you know, to chart and make people sort of rise from the dead or to levitate up in the air. Not that sort of power. But the power to participate in the world and be effective. You can only give 100% if you're 100% prepared to fail. Few people are prepared to do that. To put themselves on the line. Go out there and just give 100% to any project which they want to do. Be 100% prepared for it to be a complete waste of time. It's never really a waste of time. You're learning. You tried, which is all you could do. When you have that inner contentment, it means that whatever you succeed or fail in the world, you've always got that home to come back to, the inner home of inside. It's because I have very deep meditation. I can go out and give talks all over the place. If I make a complete idiot of myself, I don't care. It doesn't matter. You've got that home of inner peace you can always go back to. That is my resource, the center within. If you can do that, you have this unassailable little place where you can hang out, refresh yourself, make peace with yourself, get energy, and when you go out into the world to do your jobs, working hard in your business, in your marriage, in your monastery, you can work so hard. It doesn't matter if you fail. You can keep on going. It doesn't matter if people criticize you. You can keep on going because you have your inner home. In the same way, people who have a very warm and loving family, a partner who really cares for you, you have a home. I don't mean a mansion or a small little hut. The walls don't make a home. It's the people in it which make the home. If you have that home, we can go back to after a hard day's work. It doesn't matter what happened at work. You've got your partner, the warmth of that family. Just to rest in, to be at peace in, to regenerate in. Means the next morning you can go out, you can fight the world again. Because you've got a place to come back to. Unfortunately, too many people in our world today don't have that home. Their workplace is a place of conflict. Their house is a place of conflict. They've lost the ability just to appreciate each other and be kind to each other. They've lost the warmth and the source of that warmth. If you haven't got that real home of a family or a partner, you always have the home inside of yourself. Beautiful peace and stillness. Once you have that, you can always go out into the world. No matter what happens, you can always come back home for a good rest. That is where you really have the power to make goals work. The power of the mind comes from stillness. Rest, acceptance, being at peace with this moment. Door of my heart's open to this moment. When you rest like that, you have the energy. The energy is happiness. And the happiness is what causes success, as that study proved. And then whatever goals you set, you are likely to achieve them. And you're also likely to know which goals are really worth setting in life. For those of you who are still at school or college, don't try and be the ducks. Don't just try and get the honours first class with double merits, I don't know what they call it these days. In Buddhism we think the best way is the middle way. That's why when a kid came and asked them, how are you doing at school? You're top of the class? No. You're bottom of the class? No. I'm somewhere in the middle. Say, you're a real Buddhist. Middle way. Good. But in other words, you don't have to aim for the top. You don't have to aim for the bottom. Aim for the happiness. I don't know if any of you have ever read Plato's Republic. The last chapter is my favourite. Plato, the Greek philosopher. The last chapter he described what he called the process of reincarnation, the Elysian Fields, where people go after death. This is a Greek idea of reincarnation. After the death, you go to the Elysian Fields to rest. And after resting for a while, when it's time to take your next birth, you can choose what you want to be reborn as. Complete free choice. And Plato was wise enough to know only the fools and dummies choose to become famous and rich. The wisest people, they choose neither rich nor poor, but in the middle. The average Joes and Joannes, they are the happy ones. So if you're the average one, well done, you've chosen well. Make that your goal. Okay, that's the end of the talk now. Okay, any questions about today's Dhamma talk? On goals and a little bit about enlightenment in the middle there. To spice up the talk. Gee, people are just so quiet. It's really amazing that you're quiet now when I ask for questions, but as soon as we finish, you're all lining up asking me questions. It's really unfair. Never mind, okay.